Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
22 minutes after 7. We continue our discussions focusing on International Women's Day, highlighting women in various fields, speaking about some of the challenges that confront women in general, some of the advancements, the positives, the negatives, things we still need to work on. We continue those discussions at this point in time. We welcome to our program someone who has been involved in the media for many, many years. She's worked across the region. She's covered practically practically all the major events when it comes to conferences and international talks. And well, I'll let her get to familiarize you guys with her a little bit more. Let's welcome our guest this morning. That is Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited, Kema Jordan. Good morning to you and welcome to our program.
Good morning, Satish. Good morning to your wonderful Freedom listeners. Pleasure, absolute pleasure to be here with you.
It's definitely my pleasure having you on the program for more than one reason. And I preface by saying that many, many years ago when I was in television, Kema and I would interact ever so often because you were in one place and we would share stories based on a regional, setting. But I never thought that the day would come when we'd actually be in the same building. I never thought the day would come when I'd actually have you on this show. But stranger things have happened, so it's nice to have you with us here this morning as we continue our discussions, focusing on women, women's issues, International Women's Day, as I do with the majority of my guests. Let me give you the opportunity to familiarize my listeners with you. Tell us a bit about yourself, the early days. Who is Kema Jordan, and how did you manage to get into this very, very interesting field called media?
Well, it has been a fascinating journey so far, Satish. I'll go from the very beginning. I was born in a tiny village in Barbados called Castle St. Peter, and I'm the last of 9 children. So that in itself tells a wonderful story of family life, learning to deal with siblings growing up, et cetera, looking at their models, choosing what's best out of that for yourself. And as I said, it was a small village, but I learned early that it didn't matter where you came from. It really was about what you put in to the mix. And that big family allowed me the opportunity to focus on my studies, focus on the things that, you know, weren't so troubling. So I didn't have any issues of, you know, where my next meal was coming from, et cetera. We weren't rich by any stretch of the imagination, but I kind of always felt like my family was there, my mom and my dad, to provide for me. And I just really needed to go to school and learn. And that's what I did. And what that did was to open a number of opportunities for me. I knew from very early that I wanted to be in media. In fact, first, though, I thought I wanted to be a doctor when I was about 3 years old. I had a lot of doctor sex. So I thought, you know, maybe doctor is it for me. But then I knew quickly then I didn't like blood. So that wasn't for me. And then my mom used to say, you're going to be a lawyer, because I used to ask her a million questions about what are you cooking? What is in that? What is going on with this? And as time progressed, though, I quickly became the editor of my school magazine at secondary school. And from there, it kind of spiraled into more and more media. Also, too, I grew up in a Christian family. So going to church every Sunday was part of our regular routine. And I remember at age eight, and I was very short growing up, the priest handed me the Bible and put me at the podium to read. And I felt like this was a place that I was meant to be. I kind of held on to that podium, and everybody spoke to me after church about, oh, you're so brave, and how, you know, at my age, how I handled the lesson. So I think that was my first foray into public speaking. And when I welcomed it with open arms at that age, I think it also told me that this was partly crafting the career that I would go on to have. So I went into community college and did a degree in mass communications. And I was lucky at age 17, 18, CANA, the regional news agency, had a tradition at that time of hiring experienced journalists, people who spent 20, 30, 40 years in media. But as luck and fate would have it, they decided that year when I was in BCC, at the top of my class, that they would call the BCC, the Barbados Community College, and say, we need two of your best and brightest to come over and join Kana team. It was partly a financial decision, Satish, by Kana, because they were going through some financial issues. Mm. So they said, let's try some young people. And I said, fate and luck would have it that I would be one of those two. And to be honest with you, from there, the rest was history. I just grabbed that opportunity with both hands. I went in very, very green, but my eyes were wide open in terms of learning and wanting to know. I joined the print service of Kana, but I used to spend my lunchtime in the radio service just watching until the opportunity came one day that I couldn't watch anymore. They needed somebody to go over to cover a conference at the Sherbourne Conference Center, it was called at that point in time. And I went there for print, and the radio person fell ill. So the radio producer at the time called me and he said, well, Kemar, this is your time. And you know what happens, Satish, when that first opportunity comes.
I do.
You know, you get all of the butterflies in your belly, everything. But as I said, you have to rely on, come on, Kemar, this is what you're talking to yourself through this. This is what you wanted. This is what, you know, you've been practicing for. And I did my first report. And that report turned into a fight internally where the radio division and the radio and the print division, who hitherto were separate divisions and didn't come together, they operated like silos, were saying, we want Kmar over here, we want Kmar over here. And there was an assignment to Rome. I'm 19 years now, and there was an assignment to Rome, the World Food Summit, one invitation to Kana to send one journalist, but the person must be able to do print and radio. So this little girl with little experience ended up being the choice to go to Rome to cover the World Food Summit for Kana, the regional news agency. And again, those butterflies multiplied into thousands and quadruples and gazillions, because it's like, these people crazy, but at the same time, I'm excited. I want to do this. I feel I can do this. I'm talking to myself, and I'm coaching myself into this. And my mom and my dad are split, because my mom is saying, not my last child going on any plane by herself to Rome. No, she must go. This is the opportunity. You have to go. And of course, dad and I won out that argument. So that's where I ended up. And again, I could go on and on telling you about that particular assignment, which I have to write a book about one of these days, but yeah. I'll pause so you could come in.
No,
but that pretty much has been the journey.
I fully understand, because I joined at 18, and circumstance, they force you to develop much faster than you have to. And when the opportunities come, you have to take them. You have to take them, because more than proving to anyone that you're competent, you have to prove to yourself that you can get done. And I hear it in your voice. It takes me back to some of the challenges that I had when I got into the media at age 18 as well. And you really need to prove yourself, because back then, I don't know if it's, well, you highlighted it, you had to have a certain caliber to do certain things in the media. You couldn't just walk in off the street and end up on the air. That was unheard of. As it was just a cardinal sin for somebody as young as we were back then to be on the air.
It was the cardinal sin, but the opening came because the media houses themselves were going through, as I said, challenges, and they needed, even though they wanted to stick to this particular standard. My general manager, for instance, at the time was a man called Trevor Simpson, and he had about 20 years in media by the time I got to him, you know, and he was like the voice, you know, when you stood next to Trevor Simpson, a short man in stature, but great, tremendous voice. So that was those are the kind of persons that I was working alongside of, you know, and it could be intimidating, but at the same time, as I said, there was that opportunity for you to get in there. And what was important, I know we'll talk later about the lessons, but what was important was not to feel sorry for yourself or not to say you can't measure up, but to realize that this was your opportunity and you have to do what it is. It meant for me, for instance, practicing at home. I used to have this thing. I don't know why I used to practice every script with saying Antigua and Barbuda's Prime Minister Lester Byrd. It was at that time, I know that Antigua was a lot in the regional news, and I was working for Kana. And so therefore, when I went home and I did my practice scripts, which was critical, I would always be beginning my newscast with Antigua and Barbuda's Prime Minister Lester Byrd says, you know, and going down from there, you know. But it has been a journey, and it took me then from covering those assignments to coming through the ranks from a rookie reporter to being a seasoned journalist covering CARICOM affairs. There was a time, Satish, when not only I used to reach out to you at CNC3 for videos and scripts and got familiar with the Satish and the Ottos and the Samsons, etc., across Trinidad, but it was also, and at that time, Roger Sant and, yes. and Rosemary Sant and those were heading the newsroom. But it was getting on a plane every week and traveling, whether it be Haiti with the earthquake, traveling to, as I said, Rome, international assignments, or traveling the region itself. So I actually came to Trinidad about 9 or 10 times before I actually settled here, because once a regional election was called, once a political campaign started, once a major summit was held in Port of Spain, you know, you understood as a regional journalist at Kana that that's where you were expected to be. So that was pretty much the journey, lots of years, about 20 years of moving around the Caribbean until, well, before that, I went off to London and did my master's degree in communication. So there was studying in between working as well, and elevating from there to newsroom manager to being called one day and said by the then editor-in-chief of the Nation newspaper called me and he said he wanted to have a chat with me. And I said, let me go hear what he wants to say. But I'm pretty comfortable at CMC. I was by then now director of news and current affairs. And I said, let me have a chat with him and see what he's coming with. Because I figured he wanted to make me, another senior journalist in his newsroom and make an offer. But I wasn't interested at that point in moving from being a key figure heading a regional newsroom to being, you know, kind of a one-legged creature looking at domestic affairs in my native Barbados alone, because I enjoy the kind of spread of things. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, when I met with Harold Hoyt, who's now deceased, he was the first and only editor-in-chief by that time. He said to me, Kemar, I've been watching your work. I've been watching your growth and development. And I think you need to be my successor in terms of the role of editor-in-chief. And Satish, again, those goosebumps came out huge on my skin, because this was like a man that I looked up to as a young journalist. And here he was telling me that he admired my work, and he also felt that I had what it took at 35 years old by then to become the first female editor-in-chief of the Nation newspaper in Barbados. And again, you go through all the questions in your head, but there's something in your soul that says, I'm going for this, and I have what it takes, and I can go for this. And I did. I spent a couple of years there, 5 years, and then moved over to Barbados today with a new challenge of being CEO and editor-in-chief of an online publication, which was now starting up. And I'll talk about the challenges later, because you don't just move over in media. You have challenges that push you from one to the next. And again, I spent another 5 years there before I got another opportunity to head one of the biggest newsrooms in the Caribbean, which is the Gleaner Company Media Limited. And I must tell you that every time I get a call about a new opportunity, it is, you know, there's a tremendous pride that comes over me and a tremendous and awesome feeling of responsibility. And you have that conversation with yourself. But then, as you know you've gone through, the steel has gone through the hottest fire in many respects. So you know you can do this. And my last most recent call came for me to join Guardian Media. And as I said, with the other opportunities, I was, first of all, like, wow, because I get to come to Trinidad and to practice my craft. And beyond that, the kind of awesome responsibility that is on your shoulder. You don't ever, you know, take that for granted or don't understand the seriousness of it. But there is a mix of pride and accomplishment with, you know, a big challenge that you know that you have a lot on your shoulders to fill, Satish. So that's kind of the journey that's brought me to wonderful Trinidad, where I eat doubles and I eat rotis on a Saturday. And then I have to exercise during the week so that it doesn't show on the body too much.
For those of you now joining, we're speaking with Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited, Kmart Jordan, as we continue to focus on issues related to women in commemoration of International Women's Day. And taking the discussion back there, as someone who has been as exposed as you've been to media outlets across the region and having interactions with persons far and wide, do you believe that there are equal opportunities for women in media, or do we have a long way to go, or have we shattered glass ceilings so that to the point where this is no longer an issue for women in the media?
I think we put some good dents and cracks in that glass ceiling, but it hasn't been completely shattered. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, media has been traditionally a male-dominated field, and it is very hard for women to dedicate themselves to a career in media. I mean, media is, I tell people, it is a very jealous boyfriend. It doesn't like to have anybody stealing your attention. So that be that a family member or be that a friend, media is very jealous. It doesn't know boundaries. It doesn't know midnight is here and you need to go to be with your family. It doesn't know that, you know, 4 o'clock there's a recital or there's a child's play that you need to go to your children's event. It doesn't even know that your wife or your husband, that you're about to deliver a baby, wants you at that moment to be doing a story. You understand? So it is all of that. It is a very jealous occupation. And those of us who have sought to do it effectively have had to make some very tough choices in terms of what we focus on. I mean, I've missed out on so many family events. I spoke to you earlier about the fact that I come from a big family of nine. I'm the last of nine, same mother, same father. And one of the things would be when I come back and we have our Christmas get together, they'll be saying, oh, so-and-so went to, this thing happened in the family. And I would say, when did that happen? Oh, you were away somewhere, you know? So it has that kind of feeling to it sometimes, yeah? Mm-hmm. So being a woman in particular, and I've seen other colleagues fall by the wayside because of this, because, you know, when, especially women, when they get married, some of my colleagues would say, well, the husband is calling to say, well, you need to come home now, you know? And especially, as I said, when you have children, because children don't ask to be here. So your child needs to be picked up now. And at the same time, the biggest thing is occurring. So the glass ceiling has some great, tremendous dents in it, but there's a mix of reasons why it has not been shattered. Some of it because of the very nature of the beast itself, and also to the acumen and the you know, the constituency of the female person as well. How much are you willing to sacrifice to reach to the pinnacle to get there? Yeah, my own experience, I have sacrificed, I used to say I want to have a twin before I get to a particular year of my life. And then I was climbing the glass ceiling at that time, and I felt like I had 100 children that I was coming to work to manage every day, you know? So it is that type of thing that, you know, breaking the glass ceiling is not easy, because it really is one of those professions that is more geared towards men. And I'm not saying that men are not family oriented, but typically in the traditional household, the woman is the one that takes care of the children. So even if the husband is out to work late at night, you know, there are the opportunities to make up for that. So it hasn't been broken, but I would love to see it broken finally and finitely one of these days.
I don't think the average individual understands the sacrifices that are required for you to be successful. Successful, one, or for you to be good at what you do in the media, because it really does take you away from everyone else. And In my years in the business, I've had the opportunity to speak to people wanting to come in, some young people in, and I've been saying to them that you need to have somebody in your life who's very, very, very understanding, that you are not going to be available, that there are times they'll call you and they can't get you and you can't explain to them why you were unreachable for a long period. And those things are real challenges that have to be, you have to deal with them. There's one young lady who is very much involved in the media today. Very, very prominent. And we had a discussion many years ago when she was now starting off. And she had all these dreams about by what age she would have been married, and she wanted 3 children. And she had names and everything. And when you get into the business and you realize how demanding it really is, you know, there are sacrifices that need to be made that you've made and others have made. But let me ask you the question. Do you have any regrets?
I don't live by regrets. I just accepted that this is the life that I've chosen for myself, and this is the purpose for which I think that I've been called to do. And I find, like, for instance, as I said, one of the things that I used to say is that I wanted to have a twin. I just used to say that, and my doctors tell me it's still possible, but I don't think with the schedule it is still. But I've found different ways. And for instance, my partner has 2 kids. So I find that God has a way of giving you fulfillment in different ways. Yeah. So they're not my biological kids, for instance, but I've been able to close that gap still. For me, Satish, is that you still have to find balance in everything you do. And I don't want anybody listening here to me to say, you've given up so much, because the media has, I've given up a lot for media, but I've also gained so much knowledge, so much opportunities through media. And, you know, as I said in another interview at one point, you know, being in Trinidad is part of a spiritual journey, because it's sort of like at that moment when I was having a discussion, you know, there were these signs that said to me, yes, this is what you need to be doing next. So I'm learning obedience in the same time that I'm learning balance, because even if you work hard, you have to find that, you know, that moment and that routine that allows you to come off of that work high. So in my early days as a journalist, I was just going. Now I'm going, but I'm going with a purpose. So I say to myself, yes, Kemar, this is important, but equally important is that family life. So equally important is checking in on my mom now, who is in her 80s and in Barbados and away from me. So I can't hug her, but I have to talk to her every single day, Satish, because I don't know how much longer, and it would kill me, you know, if I didn't dedicate that. So part of it is passion as well. And even while you understand that this growth and development is vital, at the same time, there's a personal growth and development that's vital as well, because you can't actualize as an individual only on the career side. You have to actualize on the personal side, because you would end up with the best job that you, or your dream job, and you're a miserable and absolutely miserable individual. So the way to do it and the way that it has to be done is that ultimately we have to find that balance of professional and personal to really reach the self-actualization. So even while you're working hard and you're putting all of these hours in, you also have to find that quiet moment to meditate, to breathe, to give thanks to the Almighty, because we don't do this alone, and to also appreciate those around you. And partners are understanding, and I have a very understanding partner who's traveled this world with me. Whenever I say, okay, we're moving again, he uproots and drops his work. And I'm like fascinated that somebody would do that, you know, to be part of my journey with me and to keep me in his as well. So you gain an appreciation and you gain a balance in terms of what is important as time progresses.
I want to take a couple of calls, but when we get back, I want to speak about some of what this job has exposed you to, some of the challenges that you've seen women facing across the region where you live, here at home in Trinidad. Let's take a couple of calls. 627-3223, 625-2257. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Satish. Your guest is Miss George?
Kemar Jordan.
Kemar Jordan, right. Welcome to the program, even though it's your company. When you talk about coming from Barbados, you remind me of my good friend Julian Rogers. I'm sure you would have worked with him. Anyway, Satish, interesting, when I was with the media, all 3 newspapers, my bosses were women. Interesting. Anyway, the preamble to my question is that We women, and I congratulate all women in this country for rising to the top. We have had presidents, prime minister, opposition leader, doctors, lawyers, magistrates, judges, you name it, and of course editors, right? But long ago we used to talk about women's rights, and we had used the term women's liberation and the upliftment of women's opportunities. Now, you use the term jealousy. I want to change that term and use the principle of cause and effect. Do you feel that the upliftment of women, the rise in power of women, has any effect with regard to jealousy and so on, and the inferiority complex sometimes, or superiority, does it have any effect on domestic violence? I thank you.
Give me a call.
I mean, that's a fabulous question. I would answer it this way. I think when women are growing, so to have to, the men have to go to grow at the same pace. And if you don't get that growth, you do have jealousies that could lead. I'm not going to say that this is what leads, that domestic violence is caused by women empowerment. But it is a case where, as I said, we've had a tradition of men ruling the roost, yeah? And the society telling us, like, for instance, I share a story. I went to Africa once for a wedding, and my friend, when she and I went to university together, that's how I got there as a member of her bridal party. But when she was in the room with me, it was like she was one person. And then when her brother arrived in the room, she started to bow her head, and I was like, hitting her on the side. I was like, what's wrong with you? And she was like, no, Kamar, under our culture, you have to give your brother, you know, all of the respect and what's not. So we have these traditional, you know, setups in terms of, not our culture is not as strong in terms of that, but we have cultures like those in Africa where you can't even look your brother in the eye. And in a similar vein in the Caribbean, we've made women believe that, you know, the man must be the head of the household. He must be the breadwinner. And there has to be an enlightenment along the way, not just for men, but also for women. Because I, as much as I want to see my female colleagues progress, and I want us to break the glass ceiling, I do not believe, as a woman in a power position, that I should be sitting down in interviews and saying, oh, I only want to hire women. I want to hire the best talent for Guardian Media. If that presents itself as male, or it presents itself as female, it doesn't, it shouldn't, and it doesn't matter. Yeah? And I think this is part of what all of us have to go through in terms of this metamorphosis to move from dominant versus inferior, and dominant being male and woman being inferior, to who really has the best tools to get the job done. And by that, empower our men not to sit down and feel sorry for themselves, as women have been meant to feel sorry for themselves over the years, but to say, let me crack the books if that's what's required. Let me, you know, do what is required to be competitive, Satish.
Mm. Here's an interesting, well, we started the discussion yesterday. Internationally, it's been raging on for quite some time, feminism and its role in empowering women, some of the messages that are taught to women. How do I put this without getting myself in trouble here this morning, boy? There is a discussion. There is a discussion internationally and in other places that some women may have developed a false sense of entitlement as a result of this drive to empower women, where there are some now who believe that simply because of their gender, they should be getting opportunities that previously they won't, and maybe some others aren't getting. You just spoke about hiring based on merit. Do you believe in the discussion to empower women that we have blurred the line, and I'm using the term we loosely here, that the lines have been blurred between what you're entitled to and what you deserve?
Definitely, and it is something that I'm glad for opportunities to not only speak to men, because as I said, men have a lot of work to do in terms of getting rid of the inferiority complex, but equally, we women have a lot to do in terms of looking at ourselves and being honest in terms of whether we have the acumen for a particular role. I spoke earlier, I remember one of my best journalists once. I was almost in tears when she came to me and she said she was leaving the job. And it was ultimately, she didn't have the acumen because she felt that, you know, her actualization was taking her in a different way. And this is about the same thing. If you can't put in the time, if you can't make the sacrifice, if you can't afford to work late, then you might not be the best person for that job, you know? And I think that's something that we sisters have to be honest with ourselves about and not be pushing the card, oh, they don't like women. Nobody don't want to empower women, because I think that is reverse colonialism in terms of what we faced before, in terms of the men seeing us as inferior. So we need to get that right, Satish, and we need to face that frontally. Yeah.
And there's another discussion, and I've heard it, and it I find it interesting because there are many people who may not understand either or. You can either have a career or you can have a family, and it's difficult to have both and be happy. What's your take?
I think you can have both, but as I said, it's a give and take, and there are moments even in having both that your partner or your family will have to know that, listen, I'm going to be away at this point, but you know, at this other point, I will be there. So you have to sit down and talk to your family, talk to your spouse, talk to your partner. And there has to be a come to Jesus moment in terms of how this is really going to work. There are times when the female has to take the lead in terms of the household, because as I said, there's an adjustment that has to go on. But then that does not mean now that you are now the head of this household in the non-traditional sense, and that you are, you know, dishing out the orders. Then there's a time when you have to step back as well and be able to let your spouse go forward if you're a woman. So there's a new dynamic that, and it's not so new because it's been emerging for several years, decades now, but it is something that we haven't discussed enough in terms of being able to have it all or have both of it. I mean, sometimes it means that you're not going to be shooting on 100% of your cylinders all of the time in either sphere, but it means that, you know, you come up with a plan of action to make it work.
We are heading close to the news, just a couple of minutes before the top. And for those of you who are now joining our discussion, we are speaking here this morning as we continue our discussions on International Women's Day with Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited, Kmart Jordan. We'll continue our discussion after 8. When we get back after the news, I want to tap into some of those experiences that you've had in working in this field in Barbados, here at home, across the region, and some of the issues that you've seen women having to confront in the Caribbean. And be they, you know, I'm sure you'd have good stories, you'd have great stories, you'd have challenging stories, stories that have left a mark on you that you just can't get away from. And those, I want to get into those when we get back after the 8 o'clock news. And of course, some words of advice for the younger ones, because when you speak media, for some strange reason, it continues to be a field that is very, very attractive to the younger generation, men and women. And from someone like yourself, who's been working your way up the ranks and fighting for all the opportunities and earning them along the way, some valuable advice from you for those younger ones as well, as we continue our discussion right after 8. News is next, ladies and gentlemen, on the Morning Rumble right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Of course, we'll be taking some of your calls and your comments. You can send your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065. Our special guest, continuing with us after the 8 o'clock news, Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited, Kmart Jordan.
Join the chat now on the all-new Freedom, on the all-new Talk Radio 106.5.
Into the final hour of our show here this morning. Continuing our discussion with Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited, Kmart Jordan, our special guest, as we continue to focus on issues related to women, focusing a lot on the media. I know that before we went to the break, we were speaking about several different things, and I want to take the discussion probably in another direction. Having worked in the media, as you have, and you've been exposed to some of the challenges that women would have confronted, you've been covering stories, you would have seen over your career, there are there are those stories that resonate with you. There are stories that touch you, stories that you just, sometimes you just can't forget. There are stories that stand out in your career. Would you be able to tell us some of those that you've come across in this career that you've had related to women and some of their stories, some of their experiences?
I mean, even as you speak, I mean, I am still today touched by stories and this whole human trafficking debacle that we've been uncovering and touching on in Trinidad here in recent days and weeks is something that, you know, it is one of those that really hits at the core when you think of 2023 and there's still so many stories of young women being exploited for the sexual pleasure of men and sometimes even women in 2023 and not being able to stand up for themselves and not to have that dignity of person because you're raped over and over and over again. Those are the type of stories that, you know, no matter what nationality you are, wherever it presents itself, and I've seen and heard so much of that. I've had stories where, Satish, as an editor, women come into the office and tell you their story. And then you, even people tend to think that as an editor, as a journalist, you only want a salacious story to put in your newspaper. But I've actually had to sit with women and say, no, don't, you're not going to do this now. Have you done this? And you end up not even being a journalist at that point, but more of a counselor and a mentor. So that's one of the things that I don't think that the public gets in terms of this job that we have. There's a sense that, oh, they just want a story to sell papers. But you spend a lot of time sometimes, you know, talking people out of even coming at this point with their story because you know the implications for them and their families. And you also have a social responsibility. So even as you want that story, you don't want to know tomorrow that by your reporting it, that you've put that person or their family at greater risk. And I think, so therefore, the domestic violence situation has been one that has been particularly troubling for me as a person coming through the years. I've seen it in all of the various countries. There's a problem across the Caribbean that we have to tackle and deal with. There's also this issue of abuse of power. And coming from where I came in terms of my humble beginnings, I have a real, you know, empathy for persons who grew up in the countryside and don't have access to national resources and basic infrastructure, et cetera. So, and it's particularly women and who have to send to school children and have to raise families and can't get the basics. The trouble, Satish, though, is that highlighting this story is one thing, but you form a relationship whenever you sit down to interview someone. And again, what you don't see in the front of it is what happens after you have written or carried that person's story. There's a relationship that you can't just simply say, okay, I got your story now, goodbye. So oftentimes in the background, you're taking groceries to families, you're continuing to lobby with them to the point where it becomes like a job on its own because it is heavy. I've had, as well as an editor, to divert reporters. Like just before I left Jamaica, there was a story about a guy who was in the witness protection program. This is not a woman's story, it's a man's story. But he was not getting what was promised to him as a state witness. And the young reporter was at her wit's end because he was calling every minute. I give you the story, you're not publishing it. What is going on? And this was really too big for somebody who had just joined the media to deal with. So I had to take that on as editor. And to this day, Satish, I'm in Trinidad and he's still messaging me about issues, et cetera, because you have to say to him, okay, here's what's going on now. And you have to take that story and say to him, we can't just put this. We have to also find out from the authorities. And then when you check out this part, you have to check the next. And then, as I said, this is a person who's going through pain. So you can't just tell them to pause their pain because you don't have time to deal with it. So it can be very time consuming. It can be very intense in terms of what goes on behind the most emotional stories that you see us published in the newspapers.
I can tell you that it can,
and on air.
It can have long lasting trauma as well. Because I remember I still do my very first murder. joining television. Television is different from radio. Radio, you sit many times in the comfort of your office. There are times you cover an assignment and go out. But television takes you deep into the activity. And I remember, for some strange reason, it just appeared that at that point in time, there were a couple of people who joined television media in the various media houses, some of them female, some of us, some guys. And we all ended up on that very same story. And I remember looking, we were standing together, you know, you had your little media huddle, everybody talking on your assignment, waiting for things to happen. And I remember how traumatized some of these girls were. And they, to the point where they were questioning whether they would continue in the job, simply because they were confronted with things in their lives that they never thought they would have to confront. So I understand, I really do, and it's a tough job. We have some calls coming in. Let's take a couple of these. Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning, and good morning to your guest. It's interesting. I'm thinking about in most democratic countries, the independent and free press tend to go after the government or the people in power for the wrongs that they perceive, you know, to be wrongs. But there's pressure always on the independent press from this same group. How do you manage that situation? And have you had problems with that before, to get over that, you know, I said direct attack on the free press from the people in power? I'd listen over
here. Definitely. I mean, that's the story of my life. And I said earlier, when I was talking about my move from various media houses, I intimated that it wasn't just a decision personally to move, but sometimes you're forced out. I was fired twice in media. There was a time when I couldn't even say that aloud, Satish, yeah? But I'm now empowered to say it. And I was fired not because I'm a bad journalist, but for the very reason that the caller just raised, political interference and politicians wanting to be in control of the newsroom and to be in control ultimately of my pen as a journalist or my voice as a person who's in broadcast. And the truth is, when you stand up to them to say no, you have to be able to also have behind you a strong media management system that can also say no. And on the two occasions before when I was fired, unfortunately, my media administration was not strong enough to say no, because they were concerned at the time about projects that they have to do with the government, the level of government advertising, etc. So oftentimes, us media people become sacrificial lambs in this awful public chess game that we have going on out there as well. And what it does for a person like me is that this is why I will stand behind my newsroom. Not if we're wrong, we're going to apologize. But what I've gone through, I cannot allow people under me to go through the same thing. Otherwise, I would not have learned and I would not have grown in terms of what the contribution needs to be. But ultimately, it really comes down to the owners of your media house. And, you know, we want to go out there and be, you know, as brave as possible and do the investigative pieces. But as the caller is asking, it takes tremendous guts. And not just on the part of the reporter, but ultimately on the part of the media house to say, we are standing behind our journalists. And wherever I have moved to, this has become an important question for me in terms of the interview process. And I say, where do we stand in investigative journalism? And where do we stand in terms of protecting our journalists? Because I have fallen prey to it. And I pray to God that not many more journalists have to do the same. But it is a real and present danger. I actually just yesterday put it as an issue on our risk register that we are doing at the corporate level, because we have to come to terms with the fact that all things are not equal out there in terms of our reporting. And there's pressure, not just from the politicians either, from corporate as well, to get their way, even when they know what the truth is. Mm-hmm. So it takes a strong media house with strong owners to be able to say we are going to stand behind our journalists and we're going to stand behind the truth. Yeah, because oftentimes the truth is in conflict with revenue, Satish.
Yeah, trust me. Trust me when I say I know the battles that you speak of. Let me take another call.
Morning. I would open the Guardian, look at the comic strip, and I see all the comic strips that I like Button, Jeff, and Phantom, and all these things. But lately here, in this century here, the 21st century, you had Blondie, and you removed it. You removed Blondie, and that was the only thing I used to look at in the Guardian, still look at in the Guardian. I am past 80 now, and I'm upset over that.
No, but please don't be upset, because Blondie is one of the cartoons that we have, the comic strips that we have in line to put into the publication. So, sir, please don't be upset. Keep looking. I know that my production editor is listening this morning, and I know just last week she sent a note about that being one of the comic strips that we intend to carry into the future. So, sir, you have my assurance this morning, and your Blondie would be in the publication soon. Yeah? So please don't be upset.
It never fails to amaze me. I'm not saying this to be facetious or anything. It's just there are certain things that are so important to people that some of us may not take it seriously, but it is. You know, buying
and it's funny enough, because that's been, I remember when I went to the Nation newspaper, one of the biggest rebellions I suffered as an editor was not because of, you know, any of the political stories or anything that we wrote, but it was because of the adjusting the comic strip, because of the price they were coming in at. So I know, as you said, and different, this is the whole beauty of the public sphere, though, Satish, different strokes for different folks. And what it tells us as a public product, we have to keep connected and we have to be able to provide that variety if it's a mass-based product. So I appreciate the call this morning. We might not be able to satisfy every single want and desire, but we're going to try hard in terms of being able to do that.
Yeah.
Once it is, of course, meeting that bar of public respectability.
We're almost out of time here for our interview this morning. And it seems as though we've just scratched the surface. it really does. But there are two questions that I'd want to hopefully be my last two questions here as we wrap up. You can never tell, right? But lessons learned on the journey. You would have learned several valuable things, starting off from holding that Bible at age 8 to where you are today. What are some of the lessons that have resonated with you, the more outstanding ones?
And I'm glad you touched on the Bible, because I call myself more spiritual than I am religious, although I'm a proud Anglican, yeah? And everywhere I go and whatever I do, the first lesson is put God at the center of it, yeah? Satish, when all of those journeys I spoke to you earlier about, when I said, you know, I was on a plane at age 19 heading to Rome, I remember it was me and God. And I was, God, take me here. God, what am I? God, and the doors just seem to open whenever you put him at the center of it. I got on a plane to go to Jamaica, and I'm saying it was me and my partner and God. And I said, can we do this, Anderson? Can we do this? And God just says, opens the doors in terms of everything. I came to Trinidad and the same thing. God, can I resettle in another country? What is this? And he just opens doors in terms of making everything happen. So my most important lesson in life so far has been put God at the center of everything you do. The other thing is, for me, stick to your beliefs and standards. One of the things that I've seen in this media career is standards going left, right, center, and bottom. But there's a place for people who honor the standards of their professions. And one of the most important standards is in terms of your integrity. You cannot sell, wager your integrity for any $2, $3, or maybe even $1 million, because that kind of earnings is at a very high price in terms of your integrity. One of the beauties that I've had in this journalism career was, even when I went through difficulties, like when I left the two jobs because I was fired. I remember seeing the comments on social media and people said, this has to be about credibility because I know that girl. I know Kmart. She's not going to compromise on certain things. And it's not about being stubborn or being feeling that you have all the answers, but there really in this media profession are some things that you must not compromise on. Yeah. Also too, you must have a purpose. Yeah. I do this because I believe genuinely that I have a job to do in terms of making sure that the people get the truth in terms of what is going on. And if I don't do this because of the paycheck, I tell people the paycheck tends to come when you do it well. But what I'm noticing in the profession is a lot of people who want to start with the paycheck and not put in the work. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the important lessons. And of course, the last one has been balance, because you could be the best managing editor in the world, but you can't take that home with you at night. And so therefore, and it doesn't provide you the comforts of a woman or the comforts of a man, if you're alternative. Yeah, you have to strive for balance in your life and live without regrets. So this is the choice I made at that point in time. It came at a sacrifice, but there's no time to feel sorry for myself about that. It really is, this is the decision, and we have to keep moving on and learning from it.
Yeah.
So those would be some of the key lessons, Satish.
Yeah, definitely. That's some great, great, great words of advice as well in there. But there's one that, you know, I just want one more comment on it. And this is, I've said to people exactly what you've said to them, that this is an industry, if you work hard and you get the job done right, the money will come. Yeah. And it doesn't work the other way around, where you get the money and then you try to do the job right. And I don't know if people coming into the industry, this male and female, understand what it means to be in the media and the sacrifices that you spoke of, that we've spoken of, the persons who've been in the media for a long time understand. Some people see, they hear that, okay, there's a job on radio, there's a job in television, and immediately they're gravitating towards it because of the glitz, the glamour, and the high profile and all of those things. Has that ever been one of the important factors for you in this job?
I thank God that I've never been, and this comes now back to the very beginning again, because my dad, God rest his soul, he died in 2009, but he always would say, no matter how big you get, you know, and you're going to do well, but keep your feet planted. And he reminded me that, you know, you need to stay humble in whatever you do. So I think that's part of why you embrace the perks of the job, but you don't let them get over you. But also too, Satish, there's something key in this. Purpose tells you why you're in this. So if it's about people, and the other thing too, Satish, is that the higher up you go, it becomes less and less about you, you know?
Yeah.
It becomes more about the people who you're working with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they themselves have to have an appreciation, and it's not something that you can teach it, but they have to come with some of it as well. Why are you in this? And that's why when I do interviews, I ask people, what do you know about The Guardian? You know, what does this paper stand for? And if you can't answer that question, you don't have a shoe in for me, because you have to connect from the very start with the fact that we have a responsibility to the public of Trinidad and Tobago and the wider region in terms of what we do. We don't get out of our beds just for a paycheck. We have to get out of our beds because there's a wider mission to find, locate, and report the truth and help to use it to change the lives of people. That is an understanding that we need to ensure that the professionals that we have out there are connecting with. And it's an understanding as well that even those who have responsibility for commercializing the product need to understand, because the money doesn't come either if the people don't believe what is reported. So the credibility is at the heart and the base of everything we do.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're going to have to leave it this morning. Kmart Jordan, Managing Editor, Guardian Media Limited. It was my pleasure having you on the show this morning. And already I'm getting messages with people who are in awe of what you've had to say and your journey and all that you've been speaking of. Thank you for taking the time out of your very, very busy schedule to be with us here this morning. And as I said, you know, it was my pleasure having you here this morning. I hope you enjoyed the interview.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Satish, and thank you so much, the Freedom Family. Really enjoyed being here. You've actually empowered me for today as well, because sometimes you don't get to say what you need to say or you want to say. So I really thank you as well for this opportunity to share this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you once again. That's where we drop the curtains, ladies and gentlemen, on this, our second discussion, and what is going to be a week of discussions on issues related to women in various fields.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.